Good morning, everybody. How are we doing today? Thank you, Meg, for asking me to share my story. And a little while ago, Meg asked me if I could share my personal story about my faith journey. And right away, I said, yes, no problem. I have lots of stories to tell. Only later, I realized that this could be a lot trickier than I thought, because stories should be interesting, funny, spiritual, or even inspirational. And then I was told that I could not talk about food. So right there and then I realized that I was in trouble. However, to start with, I think that because we have a new member in the congregation, it would be worth for me to take a couple of minutes to give you some of my history and in order to appreciate where I came from and how long it took me and why it took me so long to I am here today. So I will start by telling you that I was born in Cambodia. In 1970, I was 10 years old. Our house, our village, many villages in Cambodia were bombed. Everything was burnt flat to the ground. And this was because of the Vietnam War that got spilled over to Cambodia. And our family was fairly comfortable. And one day, we went from being comfortable to totally poor and completely broke. My father was really a good provider. But after the bombing, he was depressed and he could not function. And my mother had to pull us together, moved us from where we lived. Family got split up because no relative could take all of us. We had to go live with different relatives. My mother was very resourceful. She borrowed money from relatives, friends, and she was able to buy all that she needed, equipment, dishes, utensils, and whatever else she need to open a food stand in the market. She sold different kinds of food, and that's how she supported us. We didn't have a lot of money, but we weren't hungry. And we lived like that for 5 years. And in 1975, when Khmer Rouge took over Cambodia for the first time, and Cambodia became a communist country, every city in the country had to be evacuated. Everyone had to leave the city, and we had to go to a place called New Land, where we had to live off the land, and there were no school, no libraries, no churches, no God for sure. The only thing we knew was this was Cambodia Year Zero, and many people died, many people got executed. If you were educated, or if you look intellectual, you will be executed. I was taken away from my family to a mobile team. A mobile team comprised of about 500 boys. And into that group, it subdivided into small group. And each group, there were about 30 boys. They called us a mobile team because we were moving all the time. Sometimes we move every day. Sometimes we moved every other day. But because we were moving so much, they felt that it wasn't necessary to build us a shelter because building up, taking it down every other day is too much. You don't need them. So most of the 4 years there, I was sleeping under the skies, under the trees. It got tricky sometimes when it rained because you got to find some piece of leaf or something to cover your face because otherwise it's very difficult to sleep. There wasn't much food, and we traveled all the time. We went to where the work was. I lived like that. Many people died from diseases, starvation, but a lot would die from execution. 1979, when the Vietnamese decided to invade Cambodia, it was a good thing. They decided to invade Cambodia, and the war spilled to where I was. So at that moment, there was a lot of confusion. And I had two choices, plus many other people. One was to stick around with a work camp and continue to do hard labor, but you know that sooner or later you're going to die because there's not enough food. Or the second option would be to escape. But to do that, it was a lot of risk. You have to run from where you are across the battlefield, and you could get shot. But there's a chance that if you don't get shot, then you might live and survive and run away. That's what I did. A few of us did. So a long journey, it took me to Cambodian and Thai border. I went into a Cambodian refugee. The camp was very small. It's about 2 kilometers square. But there were about 200,000 Cambodian refugees there. It was really cramped. And there are lots of stories that I could tell about my journey there, but today I'm going to focus on my faith journey, maybe some other day. And that's where I encountered Christianity and Christian organization for the first time. I was so amazed coming from a place where I was to this place. There was no killing, there was not much food, but at least we were safe. But these people, they came across the world. They came from America, they came from Germany, from many other places, but most of them were Christian. And what impressed me the most was that all of these people, they had to get there on their own resources, their time, and they do six months stint. And as you can see, it's a lot of money now knowing this society, right? But the whole time they were there, they were so happy. They were so happy to be there to help those in need. And at that point, I thought, you know, these people had something going for them because they were so strong in their belief that, and the whole time there, they didn't push any religion, God, or anything on us, and that was really good. So at that time, I decided that, okay, if I had a chance to leave this camp, I would like to learn more about Christianity and about Christian, and maybe one day I'll be like them. So when I got to Canada, I started to learn about Christianity, asking lots of questions, and being slow, it took me a long time. I ran into many roadblocks. And I learned how to get around them. So today, I'm going to share with you 3 of the main roadblocks that stopped me on my track, or at least it took me 20 years to get around them. The first one is, why did God let bad things happen to people? Second, if I became a Christian, would I have to leave my family, my friends, and my mother behind? Third, forgiving and forgiveness. So to get around this, the first one, why did God let so many people die of starvation? Why did God let so many people, babies, men, women, young and old, be executed? Why did God let the guy there in the field die because he didn't have enough strength to pull himself off of the mud and drown in the rice paddy? Why did God not let the guy next to him have enough strength to walk 10 feet over there and help them out so that he didn't drown? So why did God let half of my family be executed? The answer was always there. The answer was really simple. But hearing it, accepting it in your heart, and believing that it's true, it's totally separate, totally different. So the answer was that all of these bad things happened had absolutely nothing to do with God. Because once God decided to give his children freedom, complete freedom to choose, so we, are the children, human, have complete choice of what we decide to do. We could do good things, we could do bad things. And sometimes we do good things, and sometimes we do bad things. And when the bad decision was made, consequences happened, suffering happened. But it had nothing to do with God. Second, if I became a Christian, would I have to leave my mother behind? And I ask this question because there's a piece of text in the Bible, John 14:6. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes through the Father without me or except through me. That text alone bothered me so much, I took exception to it, and I couldn't accept it. And the reason why it was so personal, because of my mother, and I should tell you a story just to demonstrate why I felt so strongly about this. One of those days, when I had to leave school, when the school's over, I had to leave school, go to the market to help my mother pack everything up in order to carry equipment, dishes, and whatnot back to the apartment. And this one particular day, I had to carry a big basket, and in it, full of dishes. I put it on my head. You know how we carry in Asia and Africa? You carry like that, and it was heavy. As I was starting to walk, I stepped on a patch of green algae. I slipped. I fell. And needless to say, all of the dishes were broken. It was bad. It was really bad, and it was bad timing because that happened early on when my mother just started the business and she just borrowed money from people. And I knew we had to replace them, but we didn't have any money to replace them. So all our future were dependent on that basket. And I fell. It was so painful. It was really painful for me to look into my mother's eyes and saw so much pain. Despite that, what my mother did next amazed me then and continued to amaze me today when I think about her. And she came over close to me. She helped me up. She gave me a hug. And that's pretty unusual, for we don't hug a lot. And she said to me, "Hong, we will survive." She gave me another hug. We stood there crying in the rain. So, how can this text be right? My mother had everything. Compassion, love, forgiveness, and grace. And in my book, she should pass every Christianity test there is. So I said to myself, this text cannot be right. So through time and study, I concluded that the Bible was written by a group of men back then, many years ago. They were in a different culture, they used a different language, and they were trying to interpret their experience with God. And they had to put this in a language that the people could understand on paper. So, it might have made sense back then, but it sure isn't very inclusive today. And I couldn't accept that. So it had to be something else. At the very least, it's very incomplete. So I proved further that I was right in my thinking. So what did I do? I imagined God's children, that's me, that's you, sitting at home one day, and there came a knock at the door, and you came to the door, you opened the door, and there was your son, your daughter. And despite how much you want to see them, you said to them, "I'm sorry, I could not let you in because you came through the side door," and you closed the door. So can you imagine saying that? So what if that one day it was raining, lightning, and it was dangerous? And trust me, having been hit by lightning, I know how dangerous it could be. And they couldn't go to the front door. Or what if your children happened to be handicapped or have some kind of disability, and she or he could not walk through that three step to the front door? So what would you do? I can tell you two things that I would do. One, I would make sure that the path to the side door is totally clear. Two, I would build a ramp at the front door so that regardless of what day it is, when it is, when my child come, the door will be open and be welcomed regardless of which door they come in. So if I am a child of God, and you are too, I'm sure you can do this, can let them in. And as generous as Christian as we are, I'm sure that God is infinitely more generous and gracious. I am very sure that he would welcome every children that he has in the house. So that thought alone comforted me enough that, yeah, you know what? I can pass this roadblock. I don't have to think about it again. And I did. So the third one is forgiving and forgiveness. Yes, it is very easy to sit here and, yeah, I forgive you for knocking my beer over, or I'll forgive you for denting my brand new car. You know, I can take it to the garage and fix, no problem. But how does anyone forgive Hitler? How does anyone forgive Pol Pot, the Khmer Rouge leaders whose regime killed 3 of 7 million Cambodians? Half of my family were executed. Most of my friends were wiped out. The whole life that I knew was gone. The whole village disappeared. So the answer is, yes, it is possible. But it required some work. It's a process. This is what I learned. And by the way, this is a piece of commercial. Whatever I'm sharing with you is my personal feeling, and you may agree or disagree, but this is how I get around the roadblocks. So forgiving is a process through which it will take you to a spot where you can actually forgive. And until you are ready, until you are at that spot, you can't do it. So I'll give you an example. A few years back, when I went to visit my family, and I discovered that my mobile team leader was still alive, and he wasn't very far away. So I asked my brother to take me on his moped to see him, which is about an hour away. So when I got there, I had a great chat with this man. And after our conversation, I learned a lot about what happened. It put me at peace. I understand a little bit better. But at the end of that conversation, I felt very sorry for him, because he was frail, he was old, and he didn't look like he hadn't eaten for anything for a few days. So when we left, I left him some money. But what I didn't expect was what happened next. So when I got back on the moped on the way back home, I felt incredibly free. All of this burden that I had been carrying all these years, that slowed me down, that eating me up, suddenly gone. And I would not expect that, but it did happen. And the nightmares that I had been having for so many years suddenly stopped. And before that, I could talk about it, then the nightmare would come, but now I could talk all I want. It didn't come, and I don't know why. Maybe this had to do with it. And I can tell you this, I would not have been able to do that if I wasn't a Christian. So in closing, I'd just like to say, faith is not a binary answer. It's not a yes, you have a faith, or no, you don't have faith. But faith, rather, is a journey. Whether we know it or not, all of us are on this journey. And all of us are at this different spot in the journey. And that's why we see and we translate messages from God differently, because we are at different maturity. We are at a different spot. And eventually, we'll be towards the same place, one place that we all think together, but we probably don't live long enough. So, when I was confirmed and joined the church, I thought that it would be good to go home again and tell my mother. And I was totally unexpected. I didn't really know what to expect, because she had been a Christian all her life. And suddenly, And she was a Buddhist, sorry. She was a Buddhist all her life. So when I met her and I told her about Christianity a little bit, because you've got to give her a little background, she knew right away. She said, oh, she was elated. You are so lucky. Your God is so generous. Your God is so graceful. And your God forgives anybody and everybody. All they have to do is believe and ask. It's not like our God. And I said, at this point, I was amazed. I was totally blown away. And I thought, gee, you know, I got to really get some more information. So what did you mean by that? And she said, in the Buddhist, as you know, you have to have a lot of money to make offering, to make amends, to donate to pagoda, to give to the monks, in order for you to clean your slate, so that when you die and then you're born again, you're better off than this life. For me, as you know, we were poor. I don't have a lot of money, so I'm really stuck. But you, very good. Your God is so good. And I'm just so happy, because I was worrying. She knew. So, we don't really know what's going to happen in the future. All I know is this, that in this life, in order to live freely, live fully, you have to start afresh. You have to really clear your slate, and that is forgiving. So let all of us forgive. Doesn't matter what it is, when it is, who cares? Just forgive, start afresh, clean your slate, start with this journey. Because this journey is the only thing that we have that we can enjoy right now. Thank you.
I just wanted to say thanks to Hong for his story, and I can't think of a better way for these three to kick off on their new faith journey. Thank you again, Hong.